I mean, he's been putting in work for so long.
Putting a lot of work.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Putting in Work, episode 91 of the interview podcast on the 8-Bit Collective, powered by Audio Technica. And this is the first episode from my series of interviews at PAX Australia. Just got back from Melbourne, and man, I had the best time. And kicking it all off, we've got the Global PAX content director. It's Guy Jörg Blomberg himself. I did not expect to get this interview. I thought he'd be way too busy to spend half an hour yucking it up with me, but I'm glad I was wrong. It was great to talk to Jörg at the Audio Technica booth on the PAX floor. You'll hear the background noise, but thanks to those sweet Audio Technica mics, it all sounds gravy. And I had such a great time talking to Jörg about his connection to PAX, how he's been involved for as long as it's been in Australia, and worked his way up to now see over this global position. He's making sure that these events run smoothly all over the world, not just PAX, but Comic Cons and EGX events. And it was also really interesting just to see his journey of how he ended up there, because I didn't realize that he was working in graphic arts and web comics and running game websites and holding all these different events over the years that kind of led him towards being on the radar for the Penny Arcade guys who started PAX over in the US all those years ago. And you know, not all of them were successes. There was a lot of stumbling along the way, and that's obviously what's led Jörg to where he is, and it's a great lesson in what he has to say about taking chances and just trying to do things. And you know, we had a great chat about what makes PAX so special. It is this event that brings people together from all over Australia and even New Zealand, these gaming communities that are often separate or connecting online, and here we are in one building having just the time of our lives. So yeah, I look forward to a lot of great interviews for the next couple of months. I made the most of my PAX long weekend and have some awesome stuff coming to you, so stay tuned for that. But for now, here is Jörg himself, live at PAX. Enjoy the show.
Thank you for joining me, Guy. Thank you for having me at your convention.
Oh, man, it's not just me. There's so many people involved in bringing this together. But I'll take... Okay, sure.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah,
why not?
I mean, what is your title? Like, head honcho?
No. I am the...
It changes a lot, doesn't it?
I'm the global gaming content director.
Right.
So I oversee the content and collaboration between all the gaming events that ReadPop do. This is obviously PAX in Australia, PAX in North America, the EGX shows over in the UK and Germany, and a whole bunch of other ones across Southeast. I forgot. There's a lot. Lots of gaming events.
Is PAX Australia that extra bit special for being the place where it started for you?
Are you kidding? Of course it is. This is my baby. I think the thing that I love about PAX Australia especially is the Americans always saw it as a bit of a test bed. So we're allowed to kind of go out of our way a little bit and do some experimental new things that the North Americans wouldn't do. Like the speedrunning stage was one that we came up with, or different layouts and areas and whatnot. And then it's been adopted by the ones over in America. So I'm immensely proud of this show, where it's come from the rainy showgrounds to where it is today.
It's amazing. It is like the calendar event of the year for a lot of us, I think.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And I've had Luke on the podcast before, Luke Lancaster, so I'm kind of familiar with his role in bringing the content together.
Yeah.
For an event like this, are you simply making sure people are doing their jobs, or have you got a responsibility to make certain things happen as well?
So here's the thing, like most of my role now, and I used to pretty much be Luke sort of thing for the Australian PAX Australia, most of my role now is going and overseeing all these events that we do around the world and helping out where it's most needed. So either launches or shows that are struggling a little bit or need a bit of management or whatnot, which means I actually spend the least amount of time worrying about PAX Australia. This is, we're 6 years into this show now, and I'm not going to say it runs like clockwork that actually downplays the amazing work that the team do, but I'm not needed as much now. It's bittersweet, but it's lovely to be here and not have to work as hard as I used to.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a game. Yeah. I'm going to watch a panel. It's going to be crazy.
The reason that I only asked you to do this interview a few days ago was because I just assumed you would be way too busy.
No, I know. Hey. And everyone assumes that. And you know what? It makes it really, really easy when it's like, you know, it's like, hey, how you doing? I don't remember who you are, but I'm really busy. I got to keep walking.
Yeah, right.
But for the most part, no, I've actually got more time on my hands to actually chat and catch up with people, because most of what I'm doing is like long-term strategic stuff and boring things to actually make sure the shows are better in years to come. So actually most of what I do here is actually meetings and thinking and planning about the next PAX or the other PAXes in North America or the shows in Europe. So But it's
always
fun.
Thinking ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, we'll get into some of that boring stuff in a bit. But for now, let's kind of backtrack and talk about how you got into this world itself. Like, did you have events management background? Were you working in games? Like, what was the beginning of this for you,
buddy? I was a graphic designer, self-taught graphic designer. So I did web dev and all this for a while. And then a very good friend of mine by the name of Matt Burgess, we were web designers and we decided to start a website based off Penny Arcade and Eurogamer and trying to squish those into together. And we created a website called AustralianGamer.com, which like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, was actually one of the biggest independent gaming websites in Australia. And through that, I just got amazing opportunities. I worked for Sega Creative Assembly on a bunch of their games. I worked at a studio called Auron, a game developer up in Brisbane in Queensland. And then I tried a gaming TV show for a while with a guy called Yahtzee from Zero Punctuation.
Yeah, I remember Yahtzee.
Hey, there we go. Yeah. All right. And then opened a series of video game cocktail bars and a whole bunch of other stuff in between that failed miserably. Yeah. And eventually I got approached by Penny Arcade and ReadPop when they were thinking of bringing PAX to Australia. And the people in ReadPop Australia that were starting out. And because I'd actually worked across all these different disciplines in the gaming industry, so not just as a journalist, but also as a developer, as a distributor, working for a publisher, on the TV show, producing, and like managing all these different aspects of the gaming industry, not only did I have a lot of contacts, but I also had a lot of context for like how the different areas of the gaming sector actually work. So I was really well placed to kind of be that guy, quite literally, work on the Australian aspect of a North American show. So to have those contacts and bring everyone in and bring that local credibility to an event. So that's kind of, that's the cliff notes from like then to here.
Sure. It's interesting, like it sounds like the fact that you did so many different things might have been what caught their attention that, oh, this guy, he's probably up for something like this.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was Manabar because that got a lot of international attention. But I was always very, wanting to actually try different things and wanting to be quite entrepreneurial and even risk it. And I'm actually quite proud of the fact that I didn't study sort of thing. Everything I did was just taking risks and trying it and lots of failure. But everything I did, even every failure, has absolutely led me to the skill set I needed to be able to doing exactly what I am doing today. So that's quite a satisfying feeling.
Yeah, it's cool when you can look at a failure and say, well, that taught me how to do X and that taught me how to do Y and now I can do X, Y, and Z.
It's the cliche, right? It's like, oh, don't worry, it failed, but you'll learn so much from it. No, you really, really do.
Yeah.
So I can't stress that one enough. Oh, that sounds terrible. Oh, I failed my way to the top.
Yeah.
But a little bit, actually, so yeah.
So you kind of glossed over this whole like creating one of Australia's biggest websites for games. Like that in itself must have taken a hell of a lot of work at the time. So what was that like? Was it just simply kind of getting media releases, throwing them up, or were you like actively, was it game reviews? Was it finding news stories?
Again, it was like a combo of Penny Arcade and Eurogamer. So I used to draw weekly comics, and my colleague Matt and friend Matt used to write the articles. And then eventually we grew the amount of writers and stuff on the site.
Okay.
We had about a roster of 15 different contributors, but it was all very independent. It was all, we had no idea what we were doing. We had no business plan to it. We were making no money off it. This is like, 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. It's a different prospect then, but we're just enthusiasts. We just loved it. And we actually felt that there weren't many gaming websites or gaming communities that represented Australia. You'd always go to like IGN and GameSpot and like the big publications over in North America or Europe, Eurogamer and whatnot, but back then there was no Australian offices for those websites. So there are a lot of independent gaming websites, PalGen, Vooks, who's still around, which is amazing, MyGen, and there are a bunch of websites, and Australian Gamer was just one of them that popped up, and we just kind of had these personalities that drove it to be way more successful than we anticipated. It was fun times. Wouldn't work today in the same way.
Yeah.
It's a different world in terms of content creators and personalities on video and streaming, but back then it was a bit of a perfect storm.
Sure. And was that around the time when you were podcasting as well?
Yeah. So we started the podcast back then. I think all up we did around about 200 podcasts over the many, many years. And they were fun. They only ever worked because it was me and Matt, and Matt is one of my best friends. I we've known each other forever. Can I swear on this?
You can say what you need to
say. I fucking hate him. Oh my God, he's such an asshole. But because of that, we had a really great dynamic on a podcast. You can't have two people agreeing on a podcast all the time. You got to have a bit of tension.
Yeah, I agree. It's good to have at least different perspectives on, even if people agree, to have them coming from a different perspective.
Absolutely, yeah. But understand the other person. It's like, okay, I know you're saying that and you're wrong, but I do deep down respect you. So we're okay.
That's cool. And it's funny, like, I don't understand how iTunes works because I think you're still in the top charts.
Yeah,
it's
ridiculous. I know.
And what's it been, like, 3-4 years since the last episode?
I think we did one other episode like 2 years ago, and we discovered that we are two very different people now that have grown up in very different ways. I'm no longer the drunk, all shiny things kind of thing, and he's the clever, articulate, sophisticated type. I'm not saying that that's what I am. I'm just maybe not as rough as I used to be.
Sure. So when it came time to, start focusing all your energy on PAX, did you have to say goodbye to some of the other things that you were working on?
Yeah, it was funny actually, because at the time I was still running the Mana Bar. I'd actually gone to do stuff on MCV Pacific, the gaming B2B trade publication. So I was doing marketing and sales for that. And I just started an agency to actually represent groups like the Red Cross in terms of like just a whole bunch of stuff. Mm. And at the time I'm like, yeah. I'll just add PAX to the mix. Yeah. That's fine. Piece of cake.
And it's not that big yet.
When I was talking to Reed, like I actually wasn't full time for like the first period of time with Reed Pop. I'm like, no. I got a lot of things going on. But after a very short period of time, I'm like, I need to drop everything else. This is all consuming. And it's weird when you think about just an event that's 3 days. It's 3 days, man. Like of a year, it's just 3 days. Yeah. But the amount it takes to curate and properly do every part of it is just insane. So yeah,
that is crazy. And so how did that evolve over time? You said you started out in like more of a content management position. Now you're global, international.
Yeah, I think it. And this is the thing. Like if you love games, if you're passionate about games, PC games, console games, tabletop games, and whatnot, you can. And you work on a show like this, you kind of get a sense of it and a feel of like what works and what doesn't work and what the difference is between this and like your stereotypical E3 type events and whatnot. And I think there was a period of time because we were growing the Comic-Cons globally in all these other countries. And then it was like, we should really be doing this with our gaming shows. We've got the North American and Australian ones. We should be doing this. And at that point, I'm just like, hand up, like, tap me in. I want in on this. And again, very entrepreneurially, just put together like a massive pitch and strategy around a global rollout. And it was kind of, you know, given the, well, go on, go do it.
Yeah.
And here I am.
So was kind of the elevation from just an Australian role to an international one because you were someone that seemed willing to put their hand up for things and was making themselves invaluable in many ways?
Yeah, definitely invaluable, but more importantly, just really passionately believing and willing to take the risks as well, to actually try things in different regions and different countries and really push forward on that. It's not just about sitting back and going, right, well, this is my 9-to-5, this is my task list, this is my job, this is the things I do. It's really going, okay, no, holistically, overall, what is it that needs to happen to make this successful, grow, or work, and then working backwards from that goal and going, okay, well, here's everything that needs to get done, and then it's just putting it together. So really, it's about having the vision or the dream of where things should be, and then having the goal and the a time to actually like lead up to that point.
Yeah.
And the team as well. I can't stress enough how I'm just one part of what makes these shows amazing. There's like whole teams of content, marketing, sales, account management, legal, finance and whatnot that go into making a show like this. So yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like even just coming from like the media perspective for an event like this, the amount of people that I've been dealing with and I'm just like, oh wow, like, there's PR agencies on top of PR agencies.
Yeah. And it's so sad, actually, because it's like, this is 3 days, and it's like you see it all build up, and it's like this, and then, like, in 2 days, it's all going to be gone.
Yeah.
It's just disappeared.
Yeah, why
forever.
Can't this be here for, like, a month?
I know. It's just it's kind of sad, actually, to see. Every time at the end of a convention, it just gets torn down. It's kind of crazy. So
It's probably cathartic for everyone.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that right now. It's the first day. This is crazy.
Sorry.
So.
So in terms of PAX itself, what do you think it is that's made it grow so quickly into to the event that it is now in Australia?
You know what? I think the PAX model is actually very much about trying to actually smoosh people together, to actually meet and hang out with complete strangers. Any gaming show is usually an expo floor that's filled with exhibitors where you line up and you play games, and that's great. But like all the free play areas, all the panels, all the tournament spaces, all the handheld areas with theme bags and whatnot, it's all designed to try and, you know, focus people on, well, what area are you passionate about? You like tabletop games, you like PC, you like console, you like this game franchise or series, and then get strangers together to talk to each other. The whole welcome home concept of PAX, I think, is a very different value proposition than any other type of gaming show. And it's supposed to appeal to like the gaming community and try and bring people together in a really meaningful way. It's much more of a festival than an exhibition. Yeah. I think that ethos has really driven the show and actually made it stand out from anything else.
Yeah, that welcome home sign and that moniker is just, it does really resonate, I think. And
yeah,
it's something that, like, last year was my first PAX, and like seeing it kind of gives you chills. So it's like, yeah, this is my people.
Oh, like, man, I know, right? I know. Yeah. That's it. It's like, I know everyone here. I'm going to be able to have, actually, you know what? A little side tangent. Yeah. The first PAX I ever went to was 2012, I think, in Seattle, PAX West. And it was when I was just starting out, and I was like, okay, what do I need to do? What do I need to learn? And I was told, just go and experience the show, understand it. And I remember I was in the expo hall lining up for, I can't even remember what game. And I had the 3DS at the time, and I was like playing it. The guy next to me was like, oh, what are you playing? I'm like, oh, I just got the Street Fighter thing. I'm figuring out the street pass. He's like, oh, this. And then this girl too in front of us was like, oh, are you playing this because I'm doing this? And we got into a conversation for like 20 minutes. And then when we got to the front of the line, instead of playing the game that we were lining up for, we all jumped out of the queue and started fucking geeking out about all the different games that we had that we were downloading on 3DS. And
that's
it was
bad.
Like, that to me was a great like kind of moment and insight into, you know, we can build it, they will come, and all this kind of stuff. But really, it's this vibe and culture around the community that makes it a little bit different, I think. So it's hard to quantify a little bit,
yeah.
But yeah.
What do you think it is about the time we're in that makes this possible now when it maybe wasn't 20 years ago? Because last year I interviewed one of your friends, Gatesy.
Oh, yeah.
And he talked about how, you know, obviously those guys are massive nerds and they're pretty old now. But they didn't have something like this when they were growing up. And they would have loved it, especially, like, you know, they're into the board games, they're into video games. Like, why do you think it is now that this is finally able to come together?
I think it's generational, man. I mean, like, we, so many of us have grown up playing video games from when we're kids, and what I see now is so many older gamers that have kids themselves and families. It's no longer this antisocial stigma to actually play games. In fact, if anything, the rise of you know, comic book movies and the success of gaming as an entertainment platform has really made it so geek and nerd are not really ostracized terms. It's actually kind of the other way around a little bit.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think it's tough because we want it to be accessible and widely accessible to everyone, but there's still that holding on to what's special about it. But yeah, I think it's just generational. Mm. You know, my parents never played games because they didn't have them.
Yeah, right. Makes sense. And I think it's also, like, for me at least, and being like kind of in the podcasting community, having friends all over the country, it's so great to have this event to look forward to where you know that everyone's going to be there.
Yeah, right.
Because there's, you know, there's RTX, but you kind of have to be into this kind of like specific content creators
sure.
get the most out of that event.
Yeah.
And it's in Sydney. And then you've got like EB Expos obviously come into PAX now. And
yeah.
There's Comic Cons, but that's not for everyone. But
yeah,
I feel like PAX, if you like games, there is something for everyone.
Yeah, that's the point. It's supposed to be this part of pop culture, which I think is almost bigger than, it feels to me, bigger than any other part of pop culture that just draws people together. So PAX in Australia specifically was always designed to kind of be the Woodstock of gaming.
Yeah.
You know, to bring everyone from around the country together in this one moment. Hopefully to have more than just like a passing, hey, how you going, to everyone you see. But yeah,
definitely, and I think it definitely does that. So it's awesome to just be here, and I've only been here for a couple of hours and I've already seen like 10 people walk.
Brilliant.
Just like not even planning to run into them, but just walking, hey man, come here.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome. Oh, I'm glad to hear that, man.
Yeah. What is it that you are most excited to see? Because there's so many great panels this year. There's so many great speakers and visitors. We've got Bethesda here.
Yeah. Oh, their queue room activation was amazing. So actually that was a lot of fun, actually seeing them count down to the opening of the show, do like confetti cannons out and all this kind of stuff. That's new. Actually, to be honest, for me, at the moment, I'm very focused on the UK side of the business. So EGX, the show over in the UK, and EGX Berlin, and the whole team that we have at Gamer Network. So we now oversee Eurogamer, Rock Paper Shotgun, VG247, GamesIndustry.biz, and we have a bunch of our YouTuber channels and YouTuber content creators that are actually down here at PAX Oz, outside Xbox and outside Extra. So they're here, and seeing them see PAX, like they've never gone to a PAX before, and kind of understand and get an appreciation for the PAX model and the PAX type of show. And I'm really excited to actually, you know, see what they think of it and how they enjoy it. And then we can hopefully take a lot of the concepts we do here at PAX back to the UK and see how we can, you know, improve the shows over there and vice versa.
That's cool. So is there a different approach? Like, I know people are essentially the same, but they're also not. So when you're planning an event for, you know, Boston or for Seattle or for Australia, like, is there a different approach to thinking about the audience in mind?
Oh, yeah. You're like, don't even get me started on like different countries with different languages.
Yeah.
Like EGX Berlin, whole different language, whole different culture, you know, and it's this crazy collaboration with the team that we have locally in that market to go, them going, oh, we understand, you know, the gaming community here and what an event should be, and us actually going, no, we want to work with you because we've got like 15 years experience of running gaming events, let's collaborate. And that process is messy, is fun, it's collaborative, it's argumentative, but it ultimately, I think it actually, you know, formulates a good show in a different market. But it is, the similarities I would say is that the gaming demographic, the gamers, tend to be very similar across all countries. Like sometimes, like in China, you know, consoles weren't legal there for like until about 5 years ago, so they're all very heavy PC gamers.
Okay.
They look at PCs as casual. And they look, if you've got an Xbox, oh my God, you're a hardcore gamer.
Wow.
But so there's differences like that, but the actual, the concept of I like to play games, and I like to hang out with people and play games is pretty universal. So, yeah.
That's interesting. And would you say that there's like a future for PAX that's different than what we're seeing now, or do you think that it will be more or less the same thing, but just slightly bigger every year until you reach a certain point?
Well, I mean, I might know the answer to that, but if I did, I couldn't say it.
Yeah. Okay. That's, I don't know. Like,
it's very diplomatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That's your job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got this. You're not getting this out of me. I'm stone cold sober, man. This is not going to work.
I mean, I guess even like just to talk about this year, bringing EB Expo into what PAX is doing is an interesting move for you guys. Like, there was probably a lot of criticism from certain people at the time that like didn't understand what you were doing it for, or like who's going to be like pulling the strings there. But that was obviously something that's just kind of complementing what we're already doing and better for both sides, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the thing is, like, EB Games Expo was actually the only gaming show I was really able to go to in Australia and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was the only one I didn't have to work at. So I was, like, playing games and catching up with a whole bunch of friends and whatnot.
So you had to ruin it for yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think that the challenge in Australia was you've got two big gaming expos that are very different in terms of how they operate, but you're stretching, like, the publishers thin in terms of having to actually go to one show and then another one 2 weeks later in a different state. So it was actually really good to work closely with it. And we've always had a good relationship with EB, but we're like, okay, well, how do we bring a lot of the elements of EB Games Expo that fit well into PAX, would work well here to collaborate in the show? So obviously their Megastore, which makes total sense. Their EB Live Theater, I always thought they did amazing demonstrations of gameplay and whatnot, very E3-like presentation stuff that I never felt we had here at PAX a lot, but now, you know, through them we do. So I like it. It feels like a natural progression for the gaming scene here in Australia to have like this just one collaborative combined mega gaming event where everyone can focus, you know? So
As long as you don't live in Gold Coast, then you're like, damn it, now I have to fight.
Hey, look, I'm a Queensland boy, so I get it. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Melbourne, that's where it's at. And so what would you say has been the hardest part for you in terms of career-wise, getting to this point and being who you are now?
I think for me, the hardest part is actually going from being passionate about the gaming industry and gaming community to really getting an insight into how the gaming sector operates commercially and having to actually factor that in to decisions when it comes to like big events or whatnot, to really have to understand the event management side of things. Although I was saying before, like, I'm proud of where I've come from and the entrepreneurial pursuits that I actually did, I probably would have been really freaking handy if I did an event course of some sort to teach me some of the basics of event management and the legal logistical contract stuff. So
that's so much, isn't there?
Yeah, that's you know, I don't want to take away from the people that actually do that for a living properly, and they've studied and they do other boring events. That would have been, that's been the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around that. So yeah,
because sure. You're going from like a knowledge about games and media to an event with OH&S and
absolutely
security
to learn about all the square meters and booths and like what's required to actually put the behind the scenes of running an event is, it's amazing, but it's not something I was intimately aware of. I ran events at a bar, man, yeah. At a gaming bar, like, you know, swings and roundabouts, but not quite the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what would be your advice to anyone who sees an event like this and just thinks, I'd love to be involved in this, I want to be, you know, part of something as amazing as this event?
Well, I mean, to be involved in like this event and whatnot, the first thing I'd say was look at our Enforcer volunteer program. And that's really a way to really see behind the scenes of the event. Our volunteers, our enforcers, run the show, essentially. You know, all the different areas, they're the ones in yellow that are at the forefront of the event. And they all get the behind the scenes of the build-up and the tear-down and the intricacies that go in behind it. We work so closely with them. And I think if you become an enforcer for a period of time, you really get an appreciation and understanding of what it takes to actually run an event or be a part of the operation of an event. That's the easiest way to look at it, I would say.
Sure.
The easiest option.
And if someone wanted to be the next Yug, would being an enforcer be a good way to start?
Oh God, I don't know, man. Maybe it's a Highlander thing. Maybe you need to kill off Luke Lancaster and actually get in that line. I don't know. So.
Yeah, okay. My last question for you, Guy.
All right.
If you could do anything and know that you wouldn't fail, what would you do?
And know that I wouldn't fail.
Guaranteed success.
I'd launch a gaming show in China.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In China. Why?
Yeah. Because I think the Chinese market, this is getting real dry now, but I think China is the next frontier of amazing gaming culture and consumers. I've been over there and doing some things over there that's just amazing, really impressive. I mean, they've got challenges, don't get me wrong, but it's just this untapped market of gaming community that I think is just super exciting, and it's hard to make things work over there from a Western point of view. So that would be a dream.
So
actually.
So are you saying that they're kind of a little behind where our media is at for that kind of thing, so that there's a way to get in there before it happens?
No, not behind. It's just different. And
right.
Man, like the people that I've met over there, and I've caught up with a bunch of the gaming communities and local groups. Like, they're just so passionate, and they don't have the kind of interactions that we've got in a lot of the Western markets when it comes to big gaming events or festivals or associational groups pulling people together. So I just think that'd be so much fun. I don't have an answer on how to do it, though. If I did, then this question would be irrelevant.
Yeah, you'd be doing it.
I'd be doing it. So
I mean,
yeah.
It sounds like you've got contacts over there through the events that you run, though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's good. Look, anywhere we can do a gaming event where it's needed or should happen, and where it can really service the community and bring people together in a meaningful way, I want to be involved in that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me here. We're shaking hands now for the audio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
It's great because okay. I usually do these over like Google Hangouts. So to actually like stand in front of someone and talk to them and look at them in the eye.
It's so much better, isn't it?
Like,
you got this dynamic thing.
I'm now placing my hand.
Oh, my God, we're touching each other.
Thank you for listening, and thanks to Audio Technica. You can catch Yug on Twitter at Yugstar. If you enjoyed the show, please do me a favor and leave an iTunes review. It goes a really long way to helping out the show. Hey, maybe I'll even knock off Yug's podcast from years back. If you really enjoyed the show, you can leave a review or pick up some merch over at 8bit.net/PIW. That's ATEBIT. And of course, please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jono himself. And until next week, keep putting in work.